I am visiting Amy Darwish at the Immigrant Worker Center to discuss the process of refugee determination and Bill C-4, otherwise known as the Human Smuggling Bill. Good morning, Ms. Amy Darwish.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
If you were to describe a refugee within a general profile, who are refugees and how do they differ from most of the thousands of immigrants who come to Canada on a yearly basis?
I wouldn't say necessarily that there exists a profile necessarily of refugees. Refugees tend to come to Canada for under a number of different circumstances and a number of different reasons. What under the UN Convention for Refugees, which was issued in 1951, they're defined as a person who flees persecution in their country either on the basis of political activity or because of their membership in a particular social group. Say, for example, women who face sexual assault or domestic violence, or queers or queer and trans people. In Canada in 2002, that definition got widened somewhat to also include people who face a potential risk of torture, a risk to their life, as well as the possibility of facing cruel or unusual punishment if they were to return to their countries of origin. I think it's also important to point out, however, that there are a lot of people who tend to be excluded from that definition. For example, people who are facing sort of general instability, general insecurity, either because of civil war or political instability in their country, or who are leaving, say, floods or environmental catastrophe, are generally not considered refugees by this definition.
On April 21st, 2011, a massive riot sprung out in a Sydney detention center, of which about 100 refugees from Iran, Kurdistan, and Afghanistan were part of. What are the conditions of asylum seekers living in detention centers like? And do refugees have the option of avoiding living in detention centers under captivity if they have friends or relatives in the country where they seek protection?
It's interesting that you bring up the case of the Sydney Detention Centre riot, especially given that the upcoming legislation that the Conservative government is tabling, the Bill C-4, or what's commonly termed the Human Smuggling Bill, is very much modelled after Australian mandatory detention policies. For the time being, not all refugee claimants are automatically detained upon filing a refugee claim. There are a number of different circumstances that the Canadian Border Security Agency might detain someone. They cite everything from, for example, not having identity papers or potentially being what they call a risk to public safety if for whatever reason they find that you may have been convicted of a crime in your country of origin. Either way, detainees face fairly difficult conditions once in detention. It's estimated that there are currently about 400 people in detention centres across Canada. While detention is not supposed to be, it's very clear that it's supposed to be a procedure of last resort and it's not supposed to be equated with imprisonment, the conditions of being in detention are very much like that. There's a lot of barbed wire. There's a lot of blockages. There's a sort of a climate of sort of constant surveillance often in detention centers. And it's very difficult in many instances for people to get a hold of legal assistance and to be in touch with their lawyers, which can be very important as there are elements of filing a refugee claim that are quite time sensitive. The process of being in detention is often very emotionally very difficult for refugee claimants. Many of people are leaving their countries of origin under really difficult circumstances, and the process of being in a prison-like condition can be very triggering for a lot of people. It's also found that the longer you're there, the more people are likely to suffer things such as depression or anxiety or have post-traumatic stress, and which is especially significant given in light of the possibility of there being mandatory detention somewhere on the horizon. It's also important to underscore that that it's something that adds an enormous amount of stress under what is already a fairly stressful process, going through a refugee determination process that is already fairly fraught with obstacles and a lot of uncertainty. Also, when being transported to to anything from medical appointments or detention review processes, people are routinely shackled and handcuffed. And so, I mean, even if it's not strictly speaking prison, the conditions are very much like that. And it's very much a way of criminalizing people for undertaking migration itself.
Many of us are unaware that many refugees, and especially those escaping war zones, embark on a very long journey until they reach or they find adequate protection. And after fleeing, many move from places or countries of temporary residence to countries of permanent residence. What makes Canada a desirable country of destination for refugees, and how does it differ from most of the so-called developed world in terms of providing safety for persons in need of protection?
I think there's very much this myth that exists of Canada as a tel d'accueil, or a welcoming country for refugees. And I feel like, and I believe the reality is really quite far from that. For one thing, Canada is far from being one of the major destination points for a lot of refugee claimants. Most refugee claimants end up staying in the global south. I believe Pakistan accepts far more refugees than Canada does, for instance. Above and beyond that, the Canadian immigration system has very much been founded on the exclusion of different groups of migrants at different points of time during our history. For example, there's the imposition of the Chinese head tax at the turn of the 20th century. There was the internment of Japanese Canadian citizens during World War II. There was the turning away of the Komagata Maru, a boat filled with a number of Indian migrants in 1914, as well as that of the St. Louis carrying Jewish refugees from Nazi Germany in the late 1930s. I think even beyond that, on a procedural level, while Canada may not have mandatory detention policies in the same way that Australia does, and may not be along the same line, say, for example, as some of the Fortress Europe policies involved. In Europe, there are a number of procedural, there are also, even on a procedural level, there are a lot of things about the Canadian refugee determination process that are quite, like, less than ideal. For example, it used to be that you would have at least two people making a decision on your case. It's now down to one person. And a lot of the time, the IRB members are political appointees and very, very, quite widely in terms of what kind of expertise they have dealing with refugee issues. There are some instances where you have board members who don't accept anyone, others who have acceptance rates as low as 6%. It's very much a lottery in terms of who you get on the day of your hearing. In addition, there are very few recourses if your claim isn't accepted, and ones that have very low acceptance rates, as well as during the refugee determination process, refugee claimants have very little access to services while they're waiting for a decision on their claim. They're able to get they're able to get social assistance on a different scale, but an emergency health care, but they're otherwise not able to take part in language or employment programs, nor have access to social housing while they're waiting for a decision on their claim and permanent residency.
A Dominion paper article entitled "Once We Welcome Tamil Refugees" describes how a boat carrying 150 Tamil refugees from Sri Lanka had its passengers receive a warm welcome when it landed on Newfoundland shores in 1986. In August 2010, when about 500 Tamil refugees on the MV Sunsea arrived in Canada, nearly all were detained and some remain in custody. Does this mean that in the last 25 years, Canada's attitude towards refugees and human rights in general are deteriorating?
I mean, that was an excellent article, and I think it's kind of important to raise that as a contrast to the way that the Tamil migrants who arrived recently aboard the MV Sunsea were treated. That said, I mean, as I was mentioning earlier, Canadian history, immigration history, is replete with instances where different groups of migrants were excluded over time. And we have, unfortunately, a long history of turning away ships carrying migrants, be it the Kamagata Maru in 1914 or the St. Louis, which was carrying Jewish refugees fleeing Nazi Germany. There are, however, a couple of factors that are kind of contributing to things getting worse over the past few years. For one thing, I think sort of the post 9/11 context has made it easier for the government to label refugee claimants as potential terrorists or threats to public safety, or to criminalize them for the possibility of their having been involved in resistance movements. The Tamil migrants are especially important example of this, in the sense that almost immediately they were labeled as, you know, Tamil tigers and terrorists, and their treatment was very much based along those lines. I would say above and beyond this, however, there's been a real shift over the past decade from sort of permanent to temporary migration. It's been going on probably since about 2002, 2003, but has especially picked up over the last couple of years. In 2006, then Immigration Minister Monty Solberg once said that the future of migration is work. And since then, what we've noticed is fewer people being accepted as brought in as permanent residents, and more people coming into the country as temporary foreign workers. I think in 2008 was the first year where there were actually more people who came as temporary foreign workers than as permanent residents, and they, under these circumstances, they're able to come here under a work permit, work for a few years before being sent back, with very few options, you know, very little access to services, very few options for permanent residency, and often, often facing enormous amount of exploitation while they're here. So on one hand, the government has been bringing in more and more people under temporary foreign worker programs, and on the other hand, what they have been doing has been trying to shut down avenues for permanent residency. For example, there have been the proposed changes to the family sponsorship program, where they're trying to limit the amount of parents and grandparents who can be sponsored. And then, on the other hand, we've been seeing the changes to the refugee determination system, where Minister Jason Kenney has been, over the last little while, on quite a relentless campaign to label refugee claimants as, you know, as queue jumpers or as bogus claimants, as a way of justifying measures taken to limit limit people's capacity to file refugee claims in this country.
With regards to C4, the new bill proposed by the Conservative government, who does it target, and how can ordinary citizens push to avoid it being implemented?
So Bill C4 was originally tabled as Bill C-49 in the wake of the arrival of the MV Sunsea in 2010. It was roundly criticized by all sorts of community groups and civil society organizations as being incredibly punitive, and was quickly defeated, but recently reintroduced again with the election of a Conservative majority government. What Bill C-4 calls for is basically the mandatory detention of all groups of migrants who arrive by quote-unquote irregular means, and that this detention would be, you know, mandatory and go on for up to a year with no regular reviews scheduled during this time. If their claims are accepted, they will Refugees would not be able to apply for permanent residency or obtain travel documents for 5 years, nor would they be able to sponsor family members during that time. If their claims aren't accepted, they would have no recourse to applying for humanitarian and compassionate grounds. In terms of, you ask a bit about who this targets. I would say possibly the most worrisome thing about this bill is that it has incredibly vague and ambiguous wording. It calls for any migrant arriving by quote unquote irregular means. While it was written with the Tamil migrants who arrived by boat in mind, technically this could apply to any group of migrants arriving by any means, be it at the airport and so on. And the very process of coming as a refugee often implies coming via irregular means. People are leaving their countries of origin often under very difficult circumstances. They arrive without travel documents. They sometimes have to go through agents or smugglers to be able to arrive here. And under this kind of law, any group of migrants could potentially face mandatory detention with no review up to a year. In terms of what people can do to fight back, I mean, I think certainly it's important to raise awareness about the potentially devastating implications of this law, and to dispel a lot of the incredibly racist and xenophobic stereotypes and myths that it propagates. I would say there have been a number of groups who've been involved in doing so. For example, No One Is Illegal Vancouver has been doing a lot of really important work around Bill C-4 and what it could mean for migrants. However, I think it's important to also acknowledge that these laws don't come out of anywhere, and that it's also important to kind of target the broader context that allows these things to come forward in the first place. And I think it's important for people to highlight that, that people have been moving for any number of reasons since the beginning of time, either to flee wars and persecution, or to simply seek a better life for themselves, and that people should have the right to move and the right to stay once they get there. I think it's important to highlight that no person is illegal, and that if companies and capital can travel freely across borders, then people should be able to as well. There have been a number of groups, both in Montreal and beyond, that have been doing a lot of work around migrant justice struggles, be it the Solidarity City campaign that's being organized by Solidarity Across Borders, or the Immigrant Workers Center's involvement in the Temporary Foreign Workers campaign, or Status for All. And I encourage people to find out more about these two groups and get involved.
Amy Darwish from the Immigrant Workers Center, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.